Stop. Stop. Will you? Stop, Dave. Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
We're here. It's Saturday night. This is the Hour of Truth. We got a lot to talk about tonight. For you phone call people, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. We're going to have an open mic night. So I'm going to rattle on here for the next hour or two about some of the topics that we said we were going to talk about tonight, specifically HJR 62, the healthcare policy, SJR 36, the gun rights amendment, HB 1490, the common anti-common core bill, and SB 613 as amended. Those are the things I'm going to chat a little bit about tonight. Kind of bring people up to speed. I'd like to hear from you about that, 347-677-1835, but we've talked about a lot in the realm of state sovereignty, in the realm of Article 5, in the realm of specific amendments to the Constitution in the last 3 or 4 weeks. We've talked about impeachment, both those introduced by Mike Moon, as he brought to us last night, and the one introduced by Marshall. We've talked quite a bit about that. So the lines are open. We'll talk about anything tonight on Saturday night that you want to talk about, 347-677-1835. The chat room is open. Feel free to get involved there. A couple of people in the chat room now. I heard some interesting dialogue today on the radio. If you're not in the Springfield area, sometime when you're home, you need to just tune in on Saturday morning to the Matt Kenobi Gun Show. Mike Moon goes on there a lot, and they were talking quite a bit today about SB 613, but they also dealt with the impeachment process that's going on over there in the House of Representatives. As we detailed here in the last couple of meetings we had with Mike Moon, you know, this country fought a revolution. A bunch of people got together and threw some tea into the Boston Harbor, and many, many other things over this single issue of taxation without representation. There are over 250,000 people, 250,000 people in the state of Missouri who have not had any representation in either the House, in one or the other of the House or the Senate for this entire session. Those are seats that were vacated for one reason or another, and seats which the governor is constitutionally charged with calling a special election to fill without delay, and that he has left empty for the specific purpose, the specific political purpose of keeping the opposition from having a veto-proof majority. There is a lawsuit underway now, but Mike Moon has introduced articles of impeachment against the governor, and I support this. I hope you do too. If you do, you need to right now, I mean, if you're listening, you're on your computer now, quite likely. So right now, just open another tab and go to house.mo.gov, and please just shoot a quick email to your representative and to Speaker Jones and let them know that you would like to see them on board with this impeachment. It's a serious, serious issue. I mean, it's more serious than we can imagine when a quarter of a million people don't have representation in the governing body of the state for an entire session. The governor, once he got sued, finally did come online and set a date for the election sometime in August, long after the session is over. But it's imperative. I think it's imperative that we move forward with this thing. Now, Marshall's impeachment had to do with Nixon's decision, executive decision, to allow same-sex couples married in another state to file in Missouri as joint. You know, the Missouri Constitution specifically says that it only recognizes a marriage as between a man and a woman. We're being sued over that. I'll tell you quite frankly, I'm not in any way involved in having a feeling one way or the other about that. What I do have a feeling about, though, is that this is the Missouri Constitution, that the governor has said, I understand that it's the Missouri Constitution, but I'm going to do this anyway just because I don't like what it says. Now, I don't know. I don't know how that falls out exactly definition-wise, okay? Is allowing a same-sex couple legally married in another state to file a joint tax return in the state of Missouri a recognition of that marriage? The other problem I have with this is this. We're pretty insistent about the fact that if you are a Missouri resident, and let's say, for example, Missouri allows you to have a concealed carry permit, and let's say, for example, you do have a concealed carry permit, and let's say, for example, you do carry a handgun concealed, we're pretty adamant about the fact that through the full faith clause, other states need to recognize that right when we go there. I don't know that if we're going to make that kind of demand that we have any other alternative but to recognize a marriage from another state. I don't know. I give us a call and let's bat that one around for a while. I want to move on with what we're here to talk about tonight next, though. Anybody out there heard of SJR 36, the Gun Rights Amendment? Now, this is an interesting piece of legislation. It goes hand in hand with SB 613, and what it does is it proposes to the voters an amendment to the Missouri Constitution that basically restates that hold on a second. I've got to pull up the exact wording of the thing here, and I should have had this ready. But I don't. Specifically states that it is the duty of the state of Missouri to defend your right to bear arms. Just bear with me for 1 second here, and we're going to throw this up. I want to have the exact language for you. Now, I want to tell you while I'm looking for this that I'm very excited about the fact that on both of the amendments that we're going to be talking about tonight, the House itself has actually formulated the ballot language. So we're not going to have any problems with that like we had in the last constitutional amendment that came up. The full bill text. Okay, here we go. A new Section 23, Article 1 of the Constitution of Missouri is repealed, and in one new section adopted in lieu thereof, to be known as Section 23, and reads as follows. Now, this is in the Missouri Constitution, in Article 1, Section 23, there is, as there is in most state constitutions, a state-recognized right to bear arms. That is going to be replaced with this. So this isn't going to be in addition to the constitutionally safeguarded right to bear arms. This is how the constitutionally protected right to bear arms is now going to read. That the right of every citizen to keep and bear arms, ammunition, and accessories typical to the normal function of such arms in defense of his home, person, family, and property, or when lawfully summoned in aid of a civil power shall not be questioned. The rights guaranteed by this section shall be unalienable. Any restriction on these rights shall be subject to strict scrutiny, and the state of Missouri shall be obligated to uphold these rights and shall under no circumstances decline to protect against their infringement. And the ballot language will be, shall the Missouri Constitution be amended to include a declaration that the right to keep and bear arms is an unalienable right and that the state government is obligated to uphold that right? Now, I see this as an absolute correct move. I believe this amendment ought to sail through with the people of Missouri. Again, it's not adding anything to the Constitution. It's simply replacing what's already there with a stricter worded version. And one of the things you need to do, in my mind, is get a hold of your senator and let them know that what you do or don't like about this. This has been assigned to committee, I believe. Oh, no, actually, no, this is perfected. This is perfected. Should be read third time and voted out of the Senate and over to the House this week. I believe it probably will expedite through the House. We'll talk to Mike Moon about this next week. And the idea with this is to get it out so it can be on the ballot in November. Now, I'll tell you right now that there's problems with SB 613. It would be great if this and SB 613 could be married together, but SB 613 is going to become bogged down. over the amendment that we'll discuss here later in the show when we get around to that. So, but we do need this amendment. Write that down if you're listening. That's SJR 36. Now, I know, keep your pencil and paper handy, folks. I know this is going to be one of our more exciting shows. We don't have a lot of rapid-fire guests here like we do some nights. We don't have a lot of debate going on about some of the issues like we do some nights. We don't have a lot of hellfire and brimstone sermonizing from me like we do a lot of nights. But we're going to be relaying a lot of information tonight, and so keep a pencil and paper handy so that you'll have this stuff ready and at hand when you call or email your senator and or representative about this stuff, or even just when you go online to house.mo.gov or senate.mo.gov to pull up the actual bill material and read it. And listen, you know, I come here and spend time with you every Friday and Saturday night. I love doing it, but I'm an opinionated old man. So never, ever, ever just take what I say. I mean, I'm going to sit here and tell you right now, what I say is right. You could comfortably and quite reasonably just take what I say and run with it. But the fact of the matter is, I would rather that you in your own mind know it's right. So whether it's me or Hannity or Levin or whoever your favorite is, or the next door neighbor, or, you know, or your pastor for that matter, get into a talk about something like this. It is so easy with the numbers that I give you. Now, it's no easy task if you don't know that you're looking for SJR 36. But with that, with a pencil and paper and SJR 36 in hand, it is so easy to go to mo.house.gov or senate.house.mo.gov or senate.mo.gov and actually pull up SJR 36 and read it. Don't ever assume that what you hear from some big-headed talk show radio host is fact. Go there, read it for yourself. I don't want you to just, I mean, the last thing we want here at the Hour of Truth is for you to pick up information from me or from Facebook or from the Super Dave Show or from anywhere and run with it without being convinced in your own mind that it's what you want to do. I want you to want to do this, but that's the way it is. So go to, in this case, senate.mo.gov, look up SJR 36, the Gun Rights Amendment. Read it. It's a short read. I just read it to you, in fact. And convince yourself that this is a good thing. And then contact your senator right there while you're there at senate.mo.gov and let them know that this is something that they need to be working on. I generally, you know, shy away from recommending constitutional amendments. I don't like to amend the Constitution when legislation will work. I don't think there's anything wrong with SB 613 that's fatal at the moment. But we do need something like this in the Constitution. Because for several reasons. First of all, legislation is so willy-nilly. You've got an attorney general right now who won't even enforce current legislation. You've got a governor who ignores legislation. The Constitution is a little harder to ignore, especially if you need to take the governor to court over it. Excuse me while I have a drink. I got a little dry throat tonight. And this particular constitutional amendment is quite necessary. Now, you all know how I feel about the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights. They do not apply to the states. So you have no federally protected right to bear arms. I think it's imperative, absolutely imperative, that the Missouri Constitution include that protection for you. Without it, you don't have it. So I challenge you to read this piece of legislation. The other beauty about this being proposed as a constitutional amendment is that the governor gets no say on constitutional amendments. So there's no veto power. The Senate joint resolution will be written. It will pass through the Senate and the House, and then it will go on the ballot, and the people will decide, and the governor has no up or down say. Believe me, he'll be out campaigning one way or the other on this thing. But he has no real voice in this at all. So that's our take on SJR 36, the Gun Rights Amendment. I challenge you to give us a call if you've got any input on this at 347-677-1835, and I challenge you now, tonight, as you're listening, open a new browser window. I mean, as you're listening to me, I'm just a boring guy, so I know you're sitting there either playing hearts or reading the paper or chatting in Facebook while you listen to me. So instead, just open another browser window, go to senate.mo.gov, and read this bill, SJR 36, and shoot a little email to your senator and tell him or her to get on board with this thing. Now, let's go on with the other amendment next, and that's HJR. This one's starting in the House. It's HJR 62. Write that down. And as we talk, about it, you'll be able to have that handy. It's HJR. That's House Joint Resolution 62. I'm going to bring up the exact wording of that as we go on here. This is another constitutional amendment, and as such, again, we'll bypass the governor. It is actually already referred to committee. It's going to have a hearing on Wednesday. So one thing you need to do right away is go to Ron Calzone's website, MissouriFirst.org, and get, if you haven't already done so, get a witness form in. The witness form is so easy to use at Ron Calzone's website. And get your witness form in. Let's send him in there with a stack of 1,000 or so witness forms on this one, like we did on 613. Here's the full text of this constitutional amendment. I was going to read it off of Ron's email, but I think I'd just rather go straight to the okay. Here we are. This is the amendment to the Constitution, that the liberty inherent in each citizen includes autonomy in decisions regarding lawful health care-related services or products, and the manner in which contracting parties may agree for payment to be made for each service or product. No government official or agency shall have the authority either to compel any person, employer, or health care provider to participate in any health care system or purchase any specific health care services or products, or purchase health care services or products in general, or to impose any sort of direct or indirect penalty, tax, fee, or levy for choosing not to participate in such a system or purchase such products, nor shall any government official or agency make a citizen's right to offer or accept direct payment for lawful health care services subject to any form of direct or indirect penalty, tax, fee, or levy, nor shall any government official or agency dictate the mode or content of lawful health care services or products offered. The ballot language on this is, shall the Missouri Constitution be amended to declare that all persons have a fundamental natural right to make their own decisions about whether to obtain lawful health care, services, or products, and make and receive direct payment for such services or products according to private voluntary agreements? Now, understand what's behind this. This is all Obamacare-driven, of course. But it is an intent, and a stated intent of Obamacare to, you know, I heard something today in a discussion between two people that said quite precisely, you know, Americans are turning against Obamacare fast, and that is amazing because they haven't even seen the worst of it yet. This program continues to phase in over the next 3 years and maybe longer, given the nature of imperial decisions that tend to delay program startup times. And you're going to continue, as this drags on, to hear people on the other side suggest that, yeah, there's been some problems with the rollout. Yeah, there's been some problems with the glitch in this part or the glitch in that part. But quite frankly, Americans are coming to wake up to the fact that there just is a basic problem with the law. And again, we haven't seen the worst of it yet. So where I was headed with that is the intent of Obamacare is that by the time it's all said and done, it will be illegal for you to pay a doctor cash for an office visit. You're going to have to have health insurance. You're going to have to restrict yourself to only what your health insurance will cover, only with a doctor who will accept the insurance that you have, because it is going to be illegal for anyone in the medical profession to accept cash payment or payment in kind for services. So that's part of the wording of this amendment. I think this is, you know, again, I think this is a little too legislative for an amendment, but in this particular case, I once again think this is necessary. We've got to, and if it's necessary for no other reason, it is necessary so that the state of Missouri and the federal government come together in a court of law and that we get our say out there on the table. It's necessary that the state of Missouri, the government of the state of Missouri, recognize its duty to protect us from this. And it's necessary that we declare our sovereignty on this issue once more, by saying to the federal government, we're in charge of what goes on within the borders of the great state of Missouri and not you. I hope you wrote that down. That's House Joint Resolution 62, HJR 62. This one is a push, folks. There's going to be a hearing on this on Wednesday. So get your witness forms in. Again, tonight, while we're on the air here, open a browser window, If you missed it, that's Missouri First, and spell that out. It's not one S-T. It's Missouri First, FIRST.org. While you're at Missouri First, go ahead and sign up there for the newsletter from Ron Calzone, and what you'll get is a heads up on these things as they come up, and a direct link to the witness form each and every time you need to send one in. I'm going to try to get Ron here week after next to talk about some of these things. I would guess now I this weekend was out for him. He's spending some quality time at home this weekend, and I don't blame him. He's been in the Capitol working hard on three or four things. He's hip deep in this anti-Common Core thing we're going to talk about after the break. He's hip deep, of course, in 613. And now he's shoulder deep in this gun rights amendment. He's a busy, busy man. I'm going to take a guess that next week he's going to go to Lincoln Days. So I'm going to try to get him along here to talk about this, probably not next weekend, but maybe the weekend after. We'd like to hear from the expert. We'd like to hear how he thinks things are going, and we invite him anytime. We're going to take a quick break before we come back and talk about our next two items. I really, really, really want to encourage anyone who'd like to chat to give us a call at 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835, open mic night. We'll talk about any subject you want. We've covered quite a bit here in the last three or four weeks. Most shows are more exciting than tonight's, and so we'll be glad to rehash any of that, to chat that up, to hear differing opinions anytime.
You can't handle the truth!
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. Good does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have, because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we...
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the world is torn and shaken, even if your heart is breaking, it's waiting for you to awaken. Someday you will learn to be still.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC Network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
It really is all about that. I won't give up. You don't give up. Here we go. Listen, I'm not the only guy that gets to talk on here. On Tuesday night, every week, Cynthia Davis has a great show. It's called Homefront. Cynthia, everyone out there listening by now knows Cynthia Davis. She's quite conservative. She's quite liberty-minded. She's quite Christian. And she's quite pointed in her opinions. She's also a hoot. She is a ton of fun to listen to. And just a great person to know. She also has the top lineup of guests. She gets the big names, authors, doctors, theologians, people who are active and who know what they're talking about. So you want to catch Cynthia on Tuesday nights, and then don't bat an eye, because Wednesday, right along after that, comes Lisa Payne Nager. Lisa has a different kind of show format. Cynthia gets in-depth on Tuesdays. She'll spend the whole hour or hour and a half or 2 hours on a topic with a guest. She'll cover all the ins and outs of a topic. Lisa covers a lot of topics every Wednesday night, and has a lot of different guests on different topics. It's a wonderful, fast-paced show. Lisa is quite an opinionated woman, and it's a show that you'll enjoy, whether you agree with everything she says or not. And there's some things I'm sorry that Lisa's just dead wrong about, but you'll enjoy the show just for listening to it. And you'll learn a lot, even if you're learning about the other side of the argument from what you believe in. That's Lisa Payne Nager, the Culture Vigilante, on Wednesday nights. And she has a regular... during the legislative session, a regular segment there called A Yankee Doodle Legislation, where Mr. Negative himself, Tom Martz, comes along and tells you everything that's wrong with everything that's being written on every piece of paper in every office in the Capitol. So that also is a learning experience. Then on Friday, every week on this show, the show of state sovereignty, Mike Moon will join us, and he'll bring us up to date on what's going on in the Capitol for the week. We'll talk around about state sovereignty. Mike also was a person who represented the state of Missouri at the Mount Vernon meeting, and intends to continue to represent us at these pre-convention of the states meetings, where they are actually discussing the agenda. I am going to press Mike as to what specific amendments he thinks we've got to have. You know from listening to me that it is my opinion, and I'm always right, that we need to have these specific amendments that we want laid out well in advance of the Convention of the States. We need to have the most of the dickering and the horse trading go on before we call for the convention. We need to know what amendments we want, and we need to be headed in the right direction. I would even be in favor of having the specific amendments we want as part of the call to the convention that we forward to Washington, D.C. In fact, if you want to avoid a quote-unquote runaway convention, if you want to make sure that the convention is limited, you're not going to be able to do so sufficiently by just saying we're going to have a convention where we discuss amendments about limiting the power of the federal government. Quite frankly, an amendment that says any state that wants to can do anything it wants to. Any state that wants to can outlaw religion. Any state that wants to can, you know, whatever. Those are bills that limit the federal government. Just by saying any state that wants to can. I don't believe you're going to be able to seriously restrict the convention of the states to the topics you want in any close way by just simply saying we want to have a convention to limit the federal government. I think if you're going to have a prayer, and this is no guarantee, at limiting the convention of the states to a specific subject, then you need to, in the call for convention, state the amendment that you're going to propose. And back to it, if you don't agree, it's 347-677-1835. Back to it. I believe that we need only those three amendments that I keep pushing. Three amendments is all we need. Three amendments take care of all of our problems with the federal government. Three amendments return sovereignty to the states. The first is a repeal of the 17th Amendment. Give the Senate back to the states. I mean, there is no greater evidence that the founders intended the states to be sovereign than the evidence of the way they formulated the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment took sovereignty, was the final straw, was really the final straw that took sovereignty away from the states. The 14th Amendment was probably the beginning of the snowball, but not the 14th Amendment in and of itself. The 14th Amendment in the way it was construed afterwards by the courts. The 14th Amendment was not in and of itself inherently evil. The 17th Amendment was, in and of itself, inherently evil to the states. It restructured the Senate, which the founders intended to be the linchpin of state sovereignty. The two senators that the founders had represented the interests of the state of Missouri. The people had a house. You and I, we had a house of our very own. And now the state of Missouri also had a house. The second amendment that we need to propose, and I believe we need this amendment in the call for amendments that we forward to Washington, D.C., is for a state powers amendment, state repeal amendment, SRA. I've had a talk with Lloyd this week, and I've decided that I'm going to start calling it the State Powers Amendment, just because of the kind of connotation that states' rights has. But basically, a majority of the states that represent a majority of the people, a representative majority of the states, can, simply by declaring it so, repeal any federal law or regulation. In my mind, whether that comes from a executive branch, a legislative branch, or catch this, a judicial branch. So that in my mind, 26 states that represent the majority of the population of the United States ought to be able to lay aside any Supreme Court decision. That's powerful. And then the Third Amendment, and a favorite of my friend Ron Swift, who's on with us right now, is we've got to repeal the 16th Amendment. This is the third amendment that has got to come out. If these three amendments don't come out of the Convention of the States, the Convention of the States is a failure. If these three amendments don't make it, and the best way to ensure that these three amendments make it, in my mind, is to include them in the call for convention. And in my mind, these are the only three amendments that need to come out. These three amendments would take care of it. But that third one, repeal the 16th Amendment. If you're not aware of what the 16th Amendment is, it instituted the communist socialist income tax on the taxpayers of the United States of America in the guise of a tax on the rich. And when we do that, we've got to replace that with a federal consumption tax, a federal sales tax, call it the fair tax, if you will, but I do not want the legislation written into the Constitution. All the Constitution needs to say is that the only form of public revenue that the federal government is allowed is the national consumption tax. They can't have add-on gasoline taxes. They can't have add-on hidden taxes here and there. And I say the only way they're allowed to collect money from you and me, the public. The federal government can make money other ways. I don't want to take away their right to import tariff when that's necessary. I don't want to take away their right to any other form of income except that form of income that they get from the American public, whether that public be corporate or personal. But the only kind of money they can get from us, the people of the United States, is in this national sales tax. I don't believe H.R. 25 needs to be included as part of an amendment to the Constitution. I believe H.R. 25 with a couple of tweaks is the way we need to go after that's done. But we do not dare, in my mind, move ahead with H.R. 25 until the 16th is repealed. I mean, I love the fair tax. I think it's the best thing since sliced bread in the way we tax. But it cannot even be brought on board until we repeal the 16th. We cannot in any way afford to have these greedy boogers in Washington D.C. having availability of both taxes. Back home to the state of Missouri, HB 1440 is the Anti-Common Core bill. It's going to be at public hearing on Thursday of this week. It basically says that the state of Missouri can't adopt Common Core. I know this is, there's a lot more people out there who know a lot more about Common Core than I do. But I know it's a bad thing. I know it's a federal program. It's a federal education program. And when you put those words together, it's already a bad thing, federal and education. Common Core is basically a one-size-fits-all education program with the intent of having even down to the hour of the day. On this day of the school year, every fourth grader will get this math lesson, kind of thing. It is a definite attempt to seize as much control as possible from the local school board. It is a definite attempt to ease the federal government's indoctrination programs, and Missouri needs to stand up and say, no, we're not going to play that game. Again, this is about state sovereignty. This is about local sovereignty even. This is about telling the federal government to go home. It's HB 1490, if you're writing that down, HB 1490. Again, this is an urgent one because the public hearing is on Thursday of this week. So for that one, you want to go to house.mo.gov and contact your House of Representatives member. And you want to go to Missouri First and fill out a witness form today or tomorrow. Tonight would be very nice. That's HB 1490, and it's the Anti-Common Core Bill. Once more, give me 2 seconds, and I will get you exact. I think. Okay, here we go. HB 1490. It's a very short bill, and it simply says, notwithstanding any other law, the State Board of Education shall not adopt, and the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education shall not implement the Common Core State Standards developed by the Common Core Standards Initiative. Any action taken to adopt or implement the Common Core State Standards as of the effective date of this section are void. Common Core State Standards or any other statewide education standards shall not be adopted or implemented without the approval of the General Assembly. So this goes even a bit further than saying Common Core will not be adopted, and says that no statewide standard can be adopted without it is authorized by the state legislature. I don't have a problem with that. That is your representative in Washington, D.C. You don't have a direct representative on the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, DESE. So I don't have a problem with that at all. I like this bill. I think it's good policy. I'm glad they chose not to throw that in as a constitutional amendment. But it may come to that. It may well come to that. I mean, we've dedicated a quarter of our state's income and an entire article of the Constitution to education. So it may well come to bringing things like that as an amendment to the Constitution. It's HB 1490. Your action item for tonight is to get on the line, get a witness form filled out in favor of HB 1490 before Thursday's hearing. So you have two urgent action items to take away from tonight's program. One is HB 1490 with a hearing on Thursday, and one is SJR 36 with a hearing on Wednesday. SJR 36, remember, was the gun rights amendment. We've saved the best for last, and so we're going to take a quick break so I can get my throat ready for the long one. And that's going to be SB 613, the Second Amendment Preservation Act, as amended.
They told me that you had gone totally insane, and that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I didn't see any methods.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Come springtime, so let me hear you say, my love, I'm gonna stand my ground. They rise to me, I'll blow them down.
Gonna stand my ground. Okay, look, just a minute of your time again, please. It was a bad year for Secret Santa last year. We didn't get close to our goal, and we don't take that personally. Because nobody did. I mean, I'm talking the Red Kettle people didn't get near their goal. The Toys for Tots didn't get near their goal. It was that kind of year for everyone. It was that kind of year for me. I know it was that kind of year for you. But that's all the more reason that we want to say to you, this is our thing at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. I mean, we don't collect money for anything else. Anything else. One or two people in this year, one person, one member of the executive committee paid for this radio program for the year. Whenever we have any other costs associated with it, we either do without, or we go out and buy some ink and a paper, and we print our pamphlets on our own home printers. I'm telling you, we collect money for nothing. We are truly a not-for-profit, operate-at-a-loss organization. This is the only thing we collect any money for, and every dime that we collect goes to the Secret Santa program. We believe in it that much. And so all the more reason, because I know you hurt, we hurt, that we get out there in February and March and April and May and try to get to you that one month when you've got a couple of extra bucks to spare. Just that one time somewhere during the year when you've got an extra $3 or $4. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the Secret Santa button. Hit that PayPal button, please, sometime this year, and send us a buck or two for the Secret Santa thing. We promise you that your money will be put to very, very, very good use. Okay, here we go. We're going to spend probably most of the rest of the time tonight on SB 613. We talked with Ron Calzone about SB 613. We've talked about SB 613 all year last year. We'll have a little history on that. SB 613 was the Second Amendment Preservation Act, SAPA, and it basically said last year that the same thing it does this year when it started out, that no federal law could be enforced in the state of Missouri that restricted your right to carry weapons, that any federal or state officer who tried to enforce a law that in violation of the Missouri Constitution kept you from your right to possess weapons was committing a crime, and it was the duty of the state of Missouri to basically protect your right to carry arms. Last year's got sunk over an amendment that came out of the Senate during a Senate committee substitute. And lo and behold, this year, as that thing heads into Senate committee, you get a Senate committee substitute and you get a video picture of Senator Nieves and Senator Nasheed, a Democrat from St. Louis, coming to some kind of a deal to include an amendment that in my mind was specifically designed to raise questions as to whether or not this thing could make it through the Senate and then the House and sustain, if necessary, a veto from the governor. Now, I'm going to tell you right up front, I don't have the problems with this amendment that I had with last year's. I don't see anything unconstitutional in the amendment. It's troublesome, but I don't see anything fatal there. I don't see anything unconstitutional there. I don't see anything there that causes me alarm. Quite frankly, I think that anyone in Missouri who has the capacity, proven or not, to be a responsible gun owner ought to have the right to own a gun, to carry a gun, and to use a gun in defense of himself or herself, his or her family, his or her property. And quite frankly, I think that it is a sign of responsible gun ownership that if someone steals your damn gun, you report that theft within a reasonable amount of time. I don't know that we need that enshrined in the law, but I don't see it as fatal myself, as the way I did a clear violation of the Constitution with the Publications Act last time. I'd be interested in hearing what you think. 347-677-1835. Now, I will say that the rumors going around about this amendment abound. The amendment is very short. It has about 35 or 40 words in it. I didn't actually count the words. And it says that any person has to report within 72 hours of the theft of a handgun. Now, there's some quibble, bicker, argue propaganda going around about what if I don't know my gun's been stolen for 72 hours? Well, I'm going to suggest quite strongly that the law is going to read, is going to be read, that that's within 72 hours of you knowing your gun's been stolen. Your gun hasn't, you know. There's another rumor going around that this only applies to school protection officers. I've read the bill quite closely. I listened to the press conference with Senator Neves and Senator Nasheed, and I don't believe that to be the case, and I'm certain that they don't believe that to be the case. So it does. It is going to apply to you and me. I read the bill, and there's some kind of an NRA publication out that would imply that there's a ridiculous fine with this. I read the bill. I listened to the press conferences, and no, there is no penalty involved in not doing so. There's no crime committed. Well, geez, you know, yeah, people keep saying there's no crime committed, but if there's a law to do something and you don't do it, then you've broken the law, and I guess there's no other definition for crime than breaking the law. But there's no penalty, which makes the law just seem ludicrous to me to start with. I don't know what got into Brian Neves that he thought he had to give this away. I thought it was pretty clear at the press conference. Did you see the press conference at all? The clear indication from Nasheed was that she's not going to support this bill with or without the amendment. Now, why in the world Neves would see fit to agree to an amendment that doesn't even buy him any support is over my head. I don't have a problem with this amendment. I don't see this amendment as fatal. Now, I've got a thing here in the chat that tells me a friend here says there are wrinkles with SB 613. One of those is that it will require me to have a CCW to open carry in those jurisdictions that ban open carry. I don't want a CCW because I don't want to be on a federal database. So I don't know if I'm reading that right. If you want to carry, to open carry, and for you who aren't familiar with all this, open carry means not concealed. It means I have a holster on my shoulder like Matt Dillon did, and I have a gun hanging by the side, you know, down the side of my leg where everybody can see it. My friend says that 613 requires you to have a CCW to open carry in those jurisdictions that ban open carry. So let's say let's say Springfield, Missouri has a ban on open carry. Are you suggesting that with a CCW, I can open carry in Springfield, even though Springfield bans it? I don't see that in 613. It may be there and I missed it, but it will require me to have a CCW. CCW is a concealed carry permit, listeners. To open carry, that is to carry a weapon in the open, in a jurisdiction that bans open carry. Now, he goes on to say, I don't want a CCW because I don't want to be on a federal database. Yeah, that's an argument for another day. So here's a person then, that doesn't want a CCW. He or she does not want to carry a concealed weapon. He wants to open carry. I get it. Okay, so you have to have a CCW to open carry in a place that allows it. Hold on. It's Dave. Who's this caller?
Hey, hi. I just came by, and I was listening to the last 30 seconds. What I think he's saying is that there's a protected jurisdiction that bans open carry.
Right.
But if you want to have open carry, you have to have a permit. But he doesn't want to get a permit because if he gets a permit, he will then end up in a federal
right.
database.
Yeah. I finally figured that out. It is a fact that even in an area that allows open carry, you have to have a permit to open carry.
No, that's not what I'm saying. That's what you're
okay.
saying.
Right.
What I'm
okay.
saying is that now, let's say you go into a no-gun zone, right?
Right.
So you're not allowed to have any guns.
Right.
But to get around it, maybe you can go to the government and get a permit. Okay? Because if you didn't need the permit, it would be an automatic open carry zone. It'd be like shoes. You don't need a permit to have shoes, right?
Correct.
But let's say you go to a jurisdiction and they say you can no longer have shoes here. You can't wear shoes.
Right.
Okay? So now the person is ordinarily used to walking around in shoes. He says, wait a minute, I want to walk around in this place with shoes. So he goes to the government to get a permit to wear shoes. So now he gets the permit to wear shoes in a no-shoe zone, but now he's registered with the government to wear shoes. So
I got it.
What you're saying, you may be right. Maybe, because the way I'm getting it is that in a no-gun zone, you can carry a gun if you go to the government.
Okay, now, yeah, see, I don't believe that is a fact. I don't believe that if a jurisdiction like Podunk, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
makes itself a no-open carry city, that a concealed carry permit gives me a right to open carry there. I believe what he's saying is that in Podunk, Missouri,
mm-hmm.
And in fact, I believe, I recall, this has been way early this afternoon since I read 613. Okay, here we go, right here. He's providing, any person with a valid concealed carry endorsement or permit who is open carrying a firearm shall be required to have a valid concealed carry endorsement or permit from the state or a permit from another state. So, yeah, what he's saying is that even if my jurisdiction allows open carry, and this is what I remember from this afternoon, if my jurisdiction allows open carry, then I still have to have a CCW to carry open. So
okay.
I have to have a permit from the state even to open carry, and he's saying I don't want a permit from the state. I choose to open carry instead of CCW so that I don't go on this database.
Yeah, that's the other alternative. It could
right.
be the one that you're interpreting it Or it could be the other one too. I mean, if you
I'm reading right here. This guy just forwarded me the actual text of SB613, and it says just exactly that. Any person with a valid concealed carry endorsement or permit who is open carrying a firearm shall be required to have a valid concealed carry endorsement or permit from this state.
Mm-hmm.
Or a permit from another state that is recognized by this state in his or her possession at all times. So, to open carry, period, in a jurisdiction where you're allowed to open carry, you still must have a CCW permit in your possession at all times.
In your possession, right, yeah.
Yes. So basically, it is, to carry a gun, you have to have a permit. It doesn't matter... matter whether it's concealed or open. And that's his objection to SB 613. And I guess that's a valid objection. And I'm going to have to think about that. That may be...
Well, I would object to it, too, because I...
That may be fatal. Yeah.
Yeah, because according to the Second Amendment, we're allowed to bear arms, and we don't need anybody's permission to do so. So it's like gun registration. Huh?
No, according to the Second Amendment, the federal government can't stop you from bearing arms. It doesn't say anything
right
about the state government not barring you from it. It reserved that right to the state, in fact. But in the state of Missouri, your right to protect arms is protected, and that's the reason why we argue about these things, is because do we, you and me, mm-hmm. and my friend here, who are the state of Missouri... want Missourians to be allowed to carry arms openly and or concealed with or without a permit. And those are the things that you and I decide.
Well,
as the state of Missouri, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't need the state, I don't need the federal government to tell me to do anything except not to harm another person, not to slander another person, and not to encroach upon his property. And to me, that's about it. Because, you know, and there are 6 million laws written on the books by the federal government or by the federal government and the state government interpreting what the Constitution should be. And I in particular don't like it. I want to do what I want to do. And if other people don't like it, if I'm not encroaching upon your particular rights, then that's too bad. You know, I don't want somebody, some stranger that I've never met, who has a different agenda than I do, telling me what to do. Okay? So the state, as far as I'm concerned, you know, people are talking about, well, give the rights to the state. Well, if you escape a federal prison to go to a state prison, it's still a prison. So, you know, to me, state rights, I don't believe in states' rights. I believe in rights for the people, and I believe that the state is given the responsibility of protecting those rights, and it should have limited power, just like the federal government has limited power.
But so, who decides what that power is?
Well, I and anybody else. Let's say, for example, you and I live in the state of Missouri, and you and I have a conflict. You and I can go to a mediation. In other words, you and I agree upon what particular company to use for mediation, and we agree to conform to whatever their ruling is. So
let me get back to my favorite example here. You have a right to sit out in your front yard naked on Monday morning while my kid walks to elementary school past your front yard?
Sure. Yep.
And the state of Missouri has no right to stop you from doing so.
Right.
No power to stop you from doing so.
Exactly.
And so you and I, and then next week, you, me and your next-door neighbor, and then next week, me and his next-door neighbor, we need to go to mediation so that someone can tell you you can't sit out in your front yard naked while my little girl walks past?
Yep, that's what it's all about, because...
No, it's not. It's not, in fact. We formed a country here where we recognized that in order to have a civil society, someone's got to have the power to say you can't sit in your front yard naked while my little girl walks by on her way to school, and we gave that power to the state.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on that, because you have a choice to either walk by my house or not. And let's say I'm in a community where the neighbors say, you know what, we don't like it. Okay, so the neighbors get together and they talk to the neighbor that has that particular affliction of sitting out there naked, and you discuss it. But you don't give the power to somebody so that they can arbitrarily say, well, we're going to not allow this particular type of activity, because that's censorship granted by...
They don't arbitrarily say that. They say that at the will of me and all of the other neighbors of yours in the state of Missouri.
Well, that's democracy, and that's not what it's all about. It's a republic. It's supposed to have laws that are supposed to be rational in their general application towards all. And if there are conflicts...
Well,
then there are conflicts that are supposed to be solved by the people involved with those conflicts. Now, what you're talking about is like First Amendment, pornography.
No, so, I'm not talking about the First Amendment or pornography. I'm talking about a civil society, and I'm talking about a republic. I'm talking about a republic, which is a form of government where the people who represent me and the people who represent the 100 square blocks of neighbors that surround your house make rules that govern the society that we live in. Those rules are made by the representatives of the people at the will of the people, and if it is the will of the people that you not sit in your front yard naked, then that is the power that we give the state to make that rule.
Well,
I mean, who says
you
can't drive down I-44 at 100? That's not my interpretation. That's Hamilton. That's Madison. That's Jefferson. That's the Constitution.
Power.
They use the word power, not rights. I don't like the word states' rights. They use the word power. All power, not specifically delegated to the federal government, is reserved for the states.
Right, and the power given to the states. And again, if you want to escape from a federal prison to a state prison, that's fine.
Well,
I'm not
talking about prisons. I'm talking about...
I'm talking about mental prison or physical prison.
I'm talking about the words of the Constitution of the United States.
And there are people who believe that the words of the Constitution of the United States were written by people who did not have the people in mind. So, again,
okay.
I mean, King George would have thought whatever he ruled would have been good for the people. But then again,
right.
There was a revolution that said, nah, you can't do that.
Now,
the Constitution, that's supposed to be a social contract. However, since no one here in America has signed that particular contract, there will be those who have a legal argument that say that contract is null and void, and the neighbors themselves...
They would not have such a legal argument, because there is a legal and constitutional method for you to change the contract.
No. You're a constitutionalist. There are people who are anarchists who will say a contract, even under the laws granted by the Constitution, if you do not sign a contract, you are not beholden to that contract.
That's fine. They don't live in anarchy, though. They live in a constitutional republic. They could be anarchists all they want to.
We live in a theoretical constitutional republic, but then again, the state representatives and the city councils, et cetera, abuse that, what they call their particular power. That's why there are 6 million laws on the books. When there were territories, before they became states, people solved their own problems. When they solve their own problems, they've therefore left a legacy of that problem being resolved so that their neighbors, their families, could take advantage of what happened within that particular dispute.
Certainly. They solved their own problems when there were territories before they became states, and you came to a might makes right situation. What you came to is the neighbors and I are going to get together, and we're going to come down to your house and beat the crap out of you if you don't stop sitting in your front yard naked.
Well, that's a way of frontier justice. What do you think we have now? We just don't call it frontier justice. We call it justice, and what it is that there are a bunch of people called police and called judges who are influenced by other people other than those that they are supposed to serve.
But what we're doing is we're getting off the point. And the point is in our constitutional republic, and that's what we deal with here on this particular program. In our constitutional republic, it is the state of Missouri. In my case, I assume you're calling from Missouri. That tells me I can't drive 400 miles an hour down I-44. I can't sit in my front yard naked on Monday morning. I can't, it...
Well, again, that's an assumption on your part, and there's a legal argument that would buttress your argument, and there are lawyers who would go against that particular argument.
There are plenty of lawyers who would go against it. There are plenty of lawyers who will tell you that the Constitution is a living document and we can do whatever we damn well please, but the Constitution is a pretty concrete thing.
Well, yeah, there are legal arguments for both sides. The thing is, when you take a look at society around you, we no longer live in what's theoretically the benefits of that the Constitutional Republic was supposed to grant us. But be that as it may, people continue to believe that everything's okay simply because laws come down from our representatives. If a person believes in the legality of everything, in other words, anything that's being capriciously passed by people in Congress, people in state legislatures, then they feel legal is fine. I don't believe that. I believe moral is fine. And whoever decides what the morality is, there will be conflicts. There's always going to be conflicts. Just because we're not doing it by shooting each other in the street, as was the Wild Wild West myth was perpetrated amongst us, doesn't mean that violence isn't being perpetrated. When you have police who violate the so-called Bill of Rights, okay, now it doesn't matter if we have 10 Bill of Rights in the Constitution if nobody follows them, and they're not following them today. We have violence. When you have cops that get away with absolute murder, that's violence. When you have people who can't solve their own problems because if they do, they could go to jail, that's inherent violence. I would rather have the Wild Wild West where people solve their own problems.
I would rather
It wasn't that wild. People just didn't say, well, okay, Mr. Hagenforth, I don't like the color of your shirt. I don't like the way that you're out there in the street. You and I are going to have a gun battle because people died. And people aren't that, unlike the myth of watching the Western,
well,
the reading Saint
what you're
Greg,
saying,
people didn't do that.
What you're saying is the Constitution isn't working anymore. So we need to replace it with basically an anarchy. And what I'm saying is the Constitution isn't working anymore, and we need to return to the constitutional republic on which we were founded.
Well, yeah, a lot of people would say that, but then it's because of the Constitution, the way that it was written, which naturally led to this type of society.
No, it didn't. No, it didn't.
Yep.
No, it
yes,
didn't naturally
did.
Lead to that at all. No, it
no,
didn't naturally lead to that
did.
At all.
When you have
no,
eminent
no.
domain, when you have Article 1, Section 8, which allows for general welfare, which was...
Article 1, Section 8 says nothing about general welfare.
Sure it does. Article 1, Section 8 is talking about general welfare, and it's talking about the Commerce Clause. And it was something which the Anti-Federalists gave to the, made public to the public back then about the dangers of what would happen if you had such a ubiquitous, vaguely written, general welfare type of phrase in the Constitution. And it wasn't because it would be misused. It was because the general welfare clause in and of itself would lead naturally to the type of society we have today. When you have the eminent domain clause in the Constitution giving the government the right to seize your property for so-called market value, and that market value would be determined by the powers that be, that already has dictatorship ruled in the Constitution. When you have a commerce clause, when you have the ability and the power to tax in the Constitution, you have already written in, ipso facto, a natural pathway to dictatorship. Well, anyway, I'll let you get back to your show.
No, I'm sorry. You go ahead and talk, because I was pretty sure I had this thing almost word for word memorized, and I don't see anything still as I'm sitting here reading it in Article 1, Section 8, that says anything about general welfare, to raise and support armies, to provide and maintain a navy, to make rules of the government and regulations, sea forces, to calling forth the militia, to provide for the arming and disciplining of the militia, to exercise executive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district exceeding 10 square miles.
Well, if you have a constitution in front of you, then you can just use your computer to look for general welfare. It'll pop up. Just look.
Oh, I know where it pops up. It pops up in the preamble of the Constitution. And what is wrong with promoting the general welfare? I mean,
because the general welfare are two words which are so ubiquitous, so vaguely written.
They're not ubiquitous at all. The general welfare is a concrete term. Now,
it wasn't. It wasn't even that concrete back then.
You're suggesting is that because the Constitution says to promote the general welfare, there was a natural progression to what we now have as a welfare state. But that isn't true.
Not a welfare state. It does lead naturally to a welfare state if the powers that be think that a welfare state is going to create the dictatorship. Well, the general welfare clause naturally progresses into, and it doesn't morph into it, it naturally progresses into, is the fact that whoever is going to be in power can use that particular clause to justify any law that they say is good for the general welfare.
They cannot, because the Constitution does not empower the federal government to create any law for the general welfare. The Constitution only empowers the federal government to create a law in pursuance of Article 1, Section 8, the powers of the Congress.
Well, of course, that's the way some people interpret it, and then again,
I know some people would love to interpret it any other way, but the words written here on this piece of paper don't leave any other interpretation than the Congress
That's what Hamilton would have you believe. But the thing is, you have to read the Anti-Federalist. Well, I think his name is Bruno, something like that.
Well,
and
that wasn't his real name, but that's okay.
You're right.
You can read any of the Anti-Federalists you want to, Patrick Henry being chief among them, and you can find out what they thought. I mean, George Mason, who gave us Article 5 of the Constitution, stormed out of the Constitutional Convention, refusing to sign the Constitution because he said this government is going to become so big we can't control it. It's going to eat people alive. Patrick Henry said he smelled a rat as soon as they started convening because he said we don't need to give any sovereignty away at the state level.
Well, of course. But what happened was is that people thought that in order to maintain state so-called powers, they would make it so hard in order to amend the Constitution that people thought, well, the Constitution itself would be a roadblock, but people got around it. Also, again, people say, well, that's misinterpreting the General Welfare Clause. No, it's not misinterpreting it because, again, Bruno, he correctly interpreted what the General Welfare Clause would become. At that time, because of the wording of the General Welfare Clause, using the words that they used at that time and the meaning of the words of that particular day, he knew. So it's not as though somebody just came along and predicted, well, it's going to morph into or it's going to be bastardized into. He knew what it meant because they all lived through the tyranny of monarchies. During the convention, you're probably more familiar with the conventions than I am. I think it took 7 months or so. People were concerned about how it could become easily a dictatorship. That's
very concerned.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'll let you get back to the show.
Thanks for calling.
Sure. All right. Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. And see, that's the kind of thing you run into almost every day, is folks who believe that, first of all, You know, I mean, where we got started on that was exactly one of the biggest misunderstandings about constitutions and the relationship between the state and federal government. You know, the Bill of Rights to the United States Constitution, and this is why things like SB 613 and SJR 36 are so darned important to us. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights was a compact not between you and me and the federal government, but between the state of Missouri and the state of, well, let's leave the state of Missouri out of it, between the state of Massachusetts, of New York, of Pennsylvania, of Delaware, of New Hampshire at all. And, well, and I was going to say and the federal government, there wasn't even a federal government at the time. It was a compact between the states to design a very limited federal government and to limit it in its power. They specifically left all other power up to the states. Then they added a Bill of Rights because there was some level of concern even after the Constitution was written that this government would get too big. And they said in that Bill of Rights, the federal government does not have the power to legislate a religion. The federal government does not have a power to restrict the owning and bearing of firearms. The federal government does not have the power to arrest you without a warrant. The federal and none of these things, none of these things have any bearing on the state government. All other power not directly assigned to the federal government, Article 1, Section 8, is reserved for the states. The states have all other power. So walking out of the convention and the Bill of Rights, walking out of the ratification of the Constitution of the United States, there were and remain states with state religions, states that collected tithes for the church of the state in the form of taxes. And that was perfectly all right. That was perfectly constitutional because the Bill of Rights does not apply to the states. It didn't apply to the colonies. And that is why, I mean, if that were true, if that weren't true, then SB 613 wouldn't be so important. We'd be saying, okay, we need to march on Washington, D.C. and demand that the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. Early Supreme Courts, you know, the caller wanted to try to make it that, yes, we just don't understand what the welfare clause was because they use words differently then. Early Supreme Courts got that. Early Supreme Courts, Cruikshank, look it up, Cruikshank, look up the U.S. Supreme Court case in that decision. A Supreme Court of the 1890s said, no, the Bill of Rights does not restrict the state, I think of Georgia, but the state from regulating firearms. The Bill of Rights does not extend to stealing power from the state government. And so we have a state government here. We have a state government that is you, and it is me, and it is your neighbor. That's what state sovereignty is all about. You and I, in this close proximity, we get to control the state of Missouri. We don't have that kind of control in Washington, D.C., and that's what people were afraid of. But you and I, we have that control in Washington, D.C., or in Jefferson City. You know, we've said this 100 times, but three or four or five of us in six Saturday afternoons, we can hit every house in this representative district, in the district of the representative in the House in the state of Missouri three or four times. I mean, we, three or four of us on Saturday afternoons can swing our representative in Jefferson City. That's the kind of control that we want to have of the level of government that is sovereign over us. That is the level of control that we have, and that is why we make the state sovereign. But it is absolutely ludicrous to think that in a civil society, some level of government does not have to have the power to say you can do some things and you can't do other things. If we don't like that, then we want to make sure that that level of power is held at the lowest common denominator, at the level where you and I and four other people can control the outcomes. That's why state sovereignty is so damned important, because if you get away from the recognition of the fact that there has to be a level that says you can or can't raise chickens in your backyard, there has to be a level that says you can or can't let your dog go running around without a leash, you can or can't be required to give your dog a rabies shot, you can or can't whatever, park your car in the middle of the street, you can or can't put claymore mines in your front yard to keep the neighbor kids out. You know, I mean, I just don't get to go around and say I have a God-given right to do anything I damn well please, regardless of what the consequences are. It's my damn front yard. If I want to plant claymore mines out there to keep the neighbor kids out, I can. Nobody else owns my front yard but me. Some level of government in a civil society has got to be able to make the rules. And we want that level of government to be the level of government that you and I control, that you and I wrap our fist around. And that level of government is the state of Missouri. That's why these things we've talked about are so important, because it is the state of Missouri stepping up to the plate to the federal government and saying the citizens of the state of Missouri say this is the law. The citizens of the state of Missouri say here's the way it's going to be. You know, Dave Court and caller number 3 and Ron Swift and Carl Bearden and Lisa Payne Nager and Cynthia Davis all got together on a Saturday afternoon and sent a representative to Jefferson City through hard work, and that representative says, hell no, we won't do that. That is the sovereignty of the state. And that, but to recognize the importance of that, you have got to get off this, because the Bible told me so, I can do any damn thing I please. And recognize the fact that in a society of civilized people, there has to be a controlling agent. And that controlling agent, thank the founding fathers, gets to be a level that is directly controlled by you and me, by a small group of somewhat homogeneous, culturally like people represented in a very geographically close seat of power. I mean, are you one of those people who, if you went up to the state capitol, would recognize your House of Representatives member if you saw him in the hall? Better yet, are you one of those people where he or she would recognize you if they saw you in the hall? That's the level of government you want controlling, whether or not you can sit in your front yard naked, whether or not you can smoke in your car, whether or not you have to wear a seatbelt. That's the level of government you want controlling, whether or not you can sit outside naked. You know, that's the level of government you want controlling who can get a CCW and who can't. I mean, you know, somebody's got to say, the guy that just got out of the nut house yesterday, he can't have a gun. Okay? Somebody's got to say the guy that just pulled a gun on his wife yesterday and made her take the trash out, he can't have a gun anymore. You know, who do you want having the power to say that? You want to just call him out in the street, you know, like they did in Dodge City? Who do you want to have that power? Jefferson City or Washington, D.C.? That's the question of state sovereignty. And by God, with the four things we talked about tonight, the state of Missouri is finally stepping up to the plate for you and for me and saying, we are the state of Missouri. Go back and read what your great-great-great-grandfathers told you about the state of Missouri. Go back and read the Federalist Papers. Go back and read the Constitution. Go back and read the various notes that came out of the convention. Go back and read the letters between the Founding Fathers. See what they said about the power of the state of Missouri, Mr. Senator, Mr. Congressman, Mr. President. The state of Missouri is finally standing up, coming to the plate with a big bat and saying, bring it on. Now, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Are you going to go to house.mo.gov and get on the side of the state of Missouri and say, Senator, 613 is ready to fly. I want your vote. Senator, SJR 36, the gun rights amendment, needs to be seen on my ballot this November. Mr. Representative, HJR 62, the Health Care Reform Act, the Health Care Policy Act, the Health Care Policy Amendment, I want to see it on my ballot this November. Vote yes. Mr. Representative, HB 1490, which tells the federal government, keep Common Core out of my neighborhood school, I want a yes vote on that. It's house.mo.gov for HJR 62 and HB 1490, and it's senate.mo.gov for SB 613 and SJR 36. One quick break, and we'll come back with a wrap.
For 7 years I dwelt in the loose palace of exile, playing strange games with the girls of the island. Now I have come again to the land of the fair and the strong and the wise. Brothers and sisters of the pale forest, children of night, who among you will run with the hunt? Now night arrives with her purple legion. Retire now to your tents and to your dreams. Tomorrow we enter the town of my birth. I want to be ready.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
So we write to our congressman.
All right, it's been a bit. Quick review, SB613, the Second Amendment Preservation Act in the Senate. SJR, Senate Joint Resolution 36, going to committee, going to have a committee hearing on Thursday. In the House, over on the other side, HJR 62, the Health Care Policy Amendment, is going to have a hearing on Wednesday. And HB 1490, the Anti-Common Core Bill, is headed for committee. That's house.mo.gov for the HBs, and that's senate.mo.gov. We've got Cynthia Davis on Tuesday night, and we've got Lisa Payne Nager on Wednesday night. Thanks all the listeners. Thanks all the chat room visitors. Thanks for all the feedback. And thanks to our callers, I want to say that I look forward to being back with you Friday night with another visit with Mike Moon. And then next Saturday night, we're going to tackle the fourth of those objections from DeWar on the Article 5 convention. God bless you all and keep you until next time I talk to you. You go fast and run for right.